Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Today we welcome award-winning science fiction and action writer Shane Siders. We're going to talk about all kinds of stuff, and I'm really excited to have her for the first time to our show. Hi, Shane. Welcome.
Hi, Sherry. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
I'm really excited. You have such an interesting career. I can't wait to talk to you about it. But I like our new guest to let the audience know a little bit about themselves. Could you tell a little bit about your background?
I like how you said interesting. An interesting career. My background, wow. I was born in Omaha, Nebraska. I'm a Midwestern girl. We lived in, when I was old enough to know better, that was my parents. But when I was on my own, we lived in Lincoln, lived in Florida, Tampa, Florida, one of my favorite places, and then moved out to California. And I have an interesting background because I started out in Nebraska, and I had opportunities to go to some bigger schools. I was supposed to go to Brown University, but they weren't able to provide the financial aid they thought they were going to until the next semester, and I decided I would go to University of Nebraska at Omaha for a semester while I was waiting. And I kind of chickened out in a way of going to a bigger university afterwards. Like, I'm enjoying it here. I really like this. And it's kind of a good thing I did, because I was going to go for like a master's degree or a doctorate in creative writing. And instead, I got my bachelor's degree in creative writing. And along the way, I took this great class. It was a screenwriting class. And I just took it as an elective. It sounded interesting. And I found that I really loved the way screenwriting works. It's, if you write it in present tense, so it feels like very immediate, and you write it very visually, so it's, you can see it in your head as you're writing it. And I just loved it so much. I'm like, I have to do this for a living. Before that, I thought I was going to be a poet or a novelist. I picked the poetry track in the creative writing course, and my creative writing teacher, I wrote a lot of like ballad type poems. My creative writing teacher at one point said, counselor, the guy that's in charge of that program, but he also kind of, your guidance person. He's not the guidance counselor, he was a teacher, but he also was your selected person to kind of guide you as you go. He said, Shane, maybe you should switch to fiction. So I switched to the fiction track. and he was right. I love both, but I did write long stuff. So I think short stuff's harder, I've done, for my actual career, I've done shorts, and they can be harder than the longs. So I went and loved this screenwriting, but you can't really do much with screenwriting in Omaha, Nebraska. In fact, you can't really do much with writing in Omaha, Nebraska, other than it helps everything you do. It helps in every job. And so I did technology stuff. And I was doing troubleshooting for computers and sales, helping people find the right computer and that sort of thing for the university. Switched to University of Nebraska at Lincoln for work stuff. And did this really great project where we wired up the halls. I didn't do the wiring. They did the residence halls. They wired them up for Ethernet. And I headed up this thing where we put cards in everybody's computer so they could attach to the walls. Maybe nobody knows what that is, because computers come with those cards installed already. So it was really fun. I was doing all this technical stuff. In my spare time, I'd write. And then I ended up in Florida. I had a really bad relationship, and I don't mind talking about that if it's something you want to go into later. But the result was I ended up moving to Lincoln, and I met somebody that I really loved, and we ended up, he had to go to Tampa, Florida for school, and I went, I'll go with you. That sounds nice, nice and warm, get out of the winter cold here in Nebraska. So we each moved, we moved separately. I was very careful. I didn't want to to be too committed, I got a job out there doing web design, and because I'd been doing some web design at the other university. And it was my first real job outside of a university job. I mean, those are real jobs, but they're you feel kind of sheltered because everybody, the community in a university is so supportive. It's so wonderful. And so I was out in the real world, and I was on, you know, a strange place, and I just loved it. It was kind of a good adventure. And then I applied for a program, with a diversity program with the Writers Guild. And you basically could write almost any show and try to get in as a diversity hire, because women, men over 40, can't remember, you know, just regular, like, people who are considered minorities because of race. Everybody who was considered a minority in Hollywood could apply for this program. And I applied for the program, and I got a call back. And they're like, hey, when can you come in and be our, you know, come in for our interview to be basically an intern? And I'm like, they're like, when today can you come in? I'm like, I'm in Florida. They're like, oh, well, shoot, all the people that you need to talk to are here today, and this is the only day they can do it. So I guess we'll just call you the next time around. And like, well, okay, but I knew the show was ending. And they're like, I was like, so will the duties be the same for the intern? And they're like, oh yeah, the intern breaks down scripts. No big deal. We'll just have you break scripts. There'll still be scripts in January. So we'll have you, you can even call us. Call us in January. Actually, when I called them back and asked them that, you know, will the duties be the same? They said, oh, don't worry, you're our top candidate. So that was really nice to hear. Yeah, they had a sample script of mine. I don't know if they actually read it, or, you know, if they didn't have any other candidates or whatever. You know, that could have happened. So I was like, great. So I called in January, and I knew this was going to happen. They're like, oh, we're sorry, there's no more scripts to break down. And so they call this number. You know, there'll probably be another series here, and call this number and talk to the person that answers this phone. It won't be me, but, you know, so I did that. And the guy was like, who the heck is this? And I'm like, can I send you a sample? And he's like, sure. And so I wrote a sample for that show. It might have been for the show that had started. And I sent it in, and it came back with, well, we don't take unsolicited scripts. And I'm like, well, it's not unsolicited. He asked me for a sample. But it turned out that it wouldn't take scripts for that, basically, a series of shows. So then and there, I knew I had to get out to Los Angeles. And at that point, the boyfriend and I were talking about getting married, and we did. And then we were like, okay, I want to go to Los Angeles. How do we get me there? So he sacrificed a lot to get me out here. First of all, I had a job, right? And I decided I'm going to do this other job. I'm going to go and train people. The company I was doing websites for was a telecom that went out of business. And I decided, hey, I'm just going to go ahead and teach people tech stuff. And, you know, I had to do this project where I had to learn something that was kind of in demand. And then I went and got certified to teach it. And that was an IBM Rational Certified ClearCase and ClearQuest instructor. And then did a whole bunch of other stuff. And it's a very highly technical thing. It's software for people who develop software. And so I could troubleshoot it and fix it and admin it. And I went around the country. IBM flew me around the country teaching people how to do this stuff, teaching their classes. And so I'm like, I could do this from anywhere now. So I could go to L.A. So I kind of set myself up with that in the back of my mind. I had a really good offer from a friend at another place that was being bought by Intuit to do their website. And I even, like, I gave them a super expensive, super high quote for what I would want for a salary, because I was like, I really need the flexibility. I really don't want this job. And in order to tempt me, you'd have to, you know, pay me really well. I was crazy or I don't know what, but I decided, you know, I'm not going to take the job. I'm going to make myself flexible so that I can move to Los Angeles. And that's what I did. My husband, it wasn't the case for him. He couldn't be flexible, that flexible, because he's a psychologist. And they have programs. They have to do internships and then postdocs. You have to do a 2-year postdoc in the type of field he was going into. And he had to, he'd had to interview at places, and there's like this matching system that they do, and you have to get matched in a program to match to a program that does the internships and a postdoc. And so he got interviews at six places around the country, and he had them all over by California, but only a couple in California. And then he when he got matched, he ranked the California one, even though the program might not have been the best program. In fact, the program didn't have a postdoc. Most interns just go straight into postdoc because they like their intern, and they know them, and they know they're going to do a good job. They didn't have a postdoc program, and he knew he would have a big difficulty trying to get into a postdoc program if he took that that job. He did it anyway, and so I owe him a whole lot that we got out there. So we got out here, and we've been here for a while, over 5 years.
I wanted to find out a little bit about what made you do cartoon work, or was that a natural progression from your technical stuff?
So how did I get into writing? So I'd been doing writing. I'd been, you know, entering contests, and I actually started winning a couple. And then I just, you know, you get out here, and you, once you're out here, what you do is you meet people. You go to events, and you meet people, and you learn about writing. Guess what? Learning screenwriting in Omaha, Nebraska does not prepare you for real screenwriting. So even though you might be winning awards and things like that, the style is much sparser. You're writing novel style, most likely, if you're learning somewhere else. It's a little better now because there's online classes you can take and things like that to learn things more the right way. Like people who have been in the trenches a little longer than folks in Nebraska or that sort of thing. And also the styles have changed over the years. So if you get somebody, if you have a teacher who was in it 20 years ago and they're back in Nebraska teaching or whatever, and that's not really what happened, but you could run into something like that. So anyway, you get here, and that's when you really start learning, and you meet people, and you join writers' groups, and you start learning some more, and you get better, and you get better at your craft. And then if you're lucky, you meet someone who needs a writer. So I worked for the Scriptwriters Network for a while. It's a program that it's like the Writers Guild for people who are not at Writers Guild level yet. I mean, they don't do guild stuff, but they do the educational stuff, and it's like a group for that. I highly recommend it for any new writers out there that if they want to do screenwriting to join the Scriptwriters Network and go to the events that they have and listen to the talks. And you won't always get good, accurate information for the talks necessarily. Think with a critical mind when you're listening to them, but you will get information that you wouldn't have access to otherwise. And so you do that kind of thing, and then you get better at what you're doing, and you start meeting people. Through the Scriptwriters Network, I got hired for a web design job, and through the web design job, I got introduced to some development execs, and I interned a little bit at a small company called Branded Films, and that was great, meeting as Neo Edmund. He has a radio show himself. I should plug that a little because it's great. He was, you know, writing scripts and doing production stuff. He was one of the partners in the thing, and we became really good friends, and we started going to networking things together. And at the time, he was doing animation. He had this great project. It is a book that's based on it now. It's called Red Riding, Werewolf Hunter, and it's an amazing story. And so he was pitching it as animation, and so he started going to animation mixers, and he'd invite me to them. And you know, it was really nice. He didn't have to invite another writer to them, you know, on competition technically, you know, but he did. And we'd drive to these together, and it was really good for me because going to a bar, which is where a lot of these were, and you're a woman by yourself, you don't really necessarily want to do that. So it was nice to have a partner in crime for that.
Oh, yeah.
So we went to these animation network things, and then I met Craig Miller, who you might have had on before. He is the president of the president of the Animation Writers Caucus, and he's on the steering committee for that. The Animation Writers Caucus is part of the Writers' Group. And they are helping organize animation, just like live action is organized under the guild. Most animation, I don't know if your listeners would know this, most animation is not covered under the Writers Guild, it's covered under the Animation Guild, even if you're a writer. So so there's a kind of a movement to try to push to be under the other guild, because the other guild, well, it's really built for writers, whereas the Animation Guild is built for animators. We're changing that now. I've got friends who have been on like the negotiation committee for TAG, for the Animation Guild, and I think that's really helpful because the writers' voices are being heard. They had some great input for the negotiations that they might not have had writers not participated. And so really, that's kind of our fault if we're not participating, right? But so I think that's helping a lot. But so there's two guilds that we could be covered under. So I met Craig Miller, and he, being in that position and having been in the animation industry for so long, he knows everybody in animation, and he was happy to introduce us to folks and invite us to they have a writer's guild, they call it schmooze. It's a networking dinner, basically. So they bring in a guest. And again, hearing guest speakers is really helpful. You learn a lot about the industry. So I learned a ton about the animation industry listening to these guest speakers. And then you meet people, and you meet people who are becoming your peers. And sometimes, you know, it's just your friends that will eventually get you into the industry. So again, more writers groups that I met through the Animation Caucus, the Animation Writers Caucus, and then just meeting showrunner level people who are super nice. And in animation, it's just everybody's so great. They're very open, willing to talk to you, and you can get great advice from them. And just eventually, you become friends with people, and then they start reading your work, and then word gets around that you're good, and then somebody hires you, hopefully. And that's kind of what happened.
Shane, we've got a caller.
It's a call-in show. Somebody was joking. They were hoping that it was a call-in show so they could ask me some questions. I didn't realize it actually was. Great. Let's hear it.
Hold on. Hi, caller.
Hello, Shane and Sherry. I just wanted to say real quick that this is a business of relationships, and no one I know networks better than Shane.
Hello, I know who this is. Thank you. But we should talk about that a little bit because people say that about me, but networking is a dirty word.
Well, you're brilliant at it, and I will ring off, so I won't interrupt the conversation anymore, but you are an artist at networking. And now,
no, I'd much rather it be a conversation rather than me sitting here talking. So that's great. Thanks for calling. you can stay on the line if you'd like.
No.
All right. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
People say that about me, but I'm...
Oh, I love Brooke. He's a friend of the show. He's a wonderful writer, and he wrote some Emmy-winning animated show, and he's just a great guy. I love him.
What a great person, I know. He's one of the people.
Okay.
So he runs the Animation Writers Caucus Schmooze. He's been in charge of it for, I think he said those 20 years the last time, the last year? Or, is he still on? You left, right? Oh, darn.
Oh,
he left. Yeah, like 20 years. To be doing that. Because you're really giving back to other people when you're doing that. I mean, you're giving your time, you're organizing this stuff. I recently got involved with the steering committee. I'm on the committee now, and I didn't realize how much work goes into setting up these dinners and stuff, inviting the guests and getting the word out and just making the plans. And they do an award every year, and they do a party every year, and it's amazing what these guys are doing and bringing the animation groups together and bringing the community together and making it a community, really.
He's a very kind man. He's very affable and helpful and lovely. And he wrote a great book about a female detective like Sherlock Holmes. And great. And I do know Craig.
I got a sneak preview of that book. It is so good. If you haven't read it, guys, it's basically Lady Sherlock. It's Lady Sherlock Holmes. And
yeah,
it's so well done.
Definitely.
That's amazing. And Brooks is also a history buff, so he said it in the original Sherlock Holmes times, and it's so well done.
And
you have to read it.
He's got the pictures, like the old magazines that they used to do mysteries in. And
yeah, he's an artist.
Gorgeous book. Yes, I have it. I'm a mystery fan. Told me he was doing it. I got so excited. When's it going to be done? Now I'm waiting for the sequel.
The second one's coming out. Yeah, I can't wait. You'll have to have him on when he does the sequel.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He's definitely coming out. And we've already discussed it. He's like, all right.
Yay. Yeah, you know, a lot of people say that about me, that I'm good at networking, but I'm really not. I'm good at meeting people. I love meeting people. I love talking to people. I find them so interesting. And I just, you know, that's where it stops, though, because I don't like asking people for favors. So I'm really bad about, will you read my scripts, or will you hire me? And it's a fine balance. When you're on social media and things like that, you don't want to look like you don't have work. Because nobody wants to hire somebody who's not getting work. They want to hire the popular people. So you can't, like, you know, you can't post every 2 weeks, hey, I need work, you know. And the freelance, when you're a freelance writer especially, it's a really fine line. And so yeah, I'm really good at meeting people. I love meeting people. And I'm not as good at following up and making a business relationship. And that's fine for me. That's my style of networking. And it's cool because my friends will call me or send me emails and say, hey, I've got this opportunity. And a lot of times it won't pan out. It'll just be, you know, maybe it's the series that's going to come up. And if it goes, then we'll get you a script or whatever. So sometimes nothing comes out. I have six things that if I stop and counted them, I believe it's six. It was five until this morning. And then I got another email from someone. I want to apply to something I could maybe write for another show. But it, you know, maybe they'll go, maybe they won't. So it's a style, and yes, I'm great at meeting people, but I wouldn't say I'm great at networking. And I have another friend who's got this amazing book. His name is Michael Tabb, and it's called Pre-Writing Your Screenplay. It just came out. I'm pulling it out of my stack here right now. It's right underneath my written by from the Writers Guild magazine. It's just about, like, the outlining and stuff and coming up with the ideas, and that's usually not a problem for me, but his approach to it is really unique, and it's actually the approach that I was using when I was in Florida, going, hey, this is, and that's when I started winning awards. So I'm like, it's great to see somebody else that does it a lot like I did. And so I'm going to recommend his book. And while we're recommending people, two of my favorite books, of course, Steve Sears' book.
Steve has a great book about screenwriting called The Non-User-Friendly Guide for Aspiring Teen Writers, The Experience and Advice. But when you read it, it sounds like him talking.
Yes, it is him talking. And, you know, it comes from, I guess when he was, you know, like I said, people in this industry are really open and really helpful. And he was on chat rooms and things like that. People are asking questions like, how do I break in as a writer and things like that? And he would give advice. And he just basically started giving the same advice over and over. So he started collecting it and being able to copy paste it. And then he put it into a book, which is why he says it's non-user friendly, because it's not really organized as well. I think it is fairly organized as well. Now I think he probably organized a little more, but that's like, I don't know. It's like getting a doctorate degree in how the industry works and just what good networking is and things like that. And so that's, and for dialogue writing, and this is a guy I don't know, actually, I think Carl Iglesias, he does one on writing for emotional impact. And that is such a great book about how to write good dialogue, which is something that's hard to teach in a lot of ways, I think. He gives good examples and things like that so you can analyze it. So I'm going to plug some books there. But anyway, Michael Tabb, the Pre-Writing Your Screenplay Guide. I've seen him. I was behind him once at a networking thing and talking to him, and I could hear him meeting people. And he is like the friendliest guy, and he's got this nice deep voice, and he just, like, I don't know, it was just natural to him to make it a business relationship first. And I'm like, I don't know how you do that, because he just, it, just watching him, you're like, he just emanates friendship. And he's such a nice, I think it's just because he's such a nice guy, you know. Again, one of those people in the industry that are just so open and nice to work with. And so so that's the kind of person I aspire to be, is, you know, instead of being shy in the corner. I'm not that shy, but I do get that way. I found, you know what, here's the secret, guys. I tell this every once in a while to certain people. I have trouble talking to tall people because I'm short. So I'll find myself, if there's a guy who's super tall and in a suit especially, or, you know, they look super important, I will find myself having trouble talking to them because it's, you know, first of all, they have to bend down to talk to me. It's kind of awkward. But second of all, they're intimidating, you know. So people are like, oh, Shane, you're so good at meeting people. No, not if you're tall. I'm not sure how I met my husband. He's 6'1".
It's funny, yeah, because it's, weird. I make my living interviewing people, and I also, I mean, I do radio plays and stuff like that. So I talk to people all the time on the phone, on Skype, on radio. But I'm really shy in person. I am
incredible.
My father used to call me his shy actress because I was, that was all my life. I just, it's that high school thing, you know, that you kind of never leave.
Yeah, me too, actually. And that's the other thing that was, man, there's a book, I can't remember the name, but it talked about, Marilyn Monroe. They mentioned an interview with Marilyn Monroe, and the interviewer went with her through, like, I think it was a subway system or something, and she was able to completely disguise herself by just her demeanor, and they went through the subway, and nobody recognized her. And then she said, okay, now watch this. And they, I guess when they came out or something, she just stood up and, you know, put her personality on and put on her confidence. And people were flocking and recognizing her, you know. And so it was an interesting point this book was making, is if you just put your confidence on, you're like a different person. So you just have to kind of practice with confidence and try to emanate that confidence. And that's a really good, you know, it's a really good idea.
Kind of project. I actually read that. It was in a novel. It was in a biography of Marilyn.
Correct me where I was wrong. I'm sure I was wrong on some of that. Correct me. Was it right? Was it wrong?
It was in a biography of Marilyn. I can't remember the name of it, but the quote was actually from, what's her name? She's the daughter of the man who was the creator of the Actor Studio, Strasberg.
Okay.
Susan Strasberg. That's who was talking. Susan Strasberg, and she was. They were really good friends, and they were on a bus or a subway or a taxi or something. I didn't remember, and nobody recognized her. And then she said, "Watch." And she took off her scarf. She always wore a scarf. She used to always wear black pants, white shirt, a scarf, and a sweater when she went to the Actor's Studio. And nobody ever recognized her, even inside the studio, except the people in her class. They didn't recognize her.
Wow.
And so they were out, and she was with Susan, who she liked a lot and she trusted. She said, "Watch." And she just took the scarf off and the cardigan and handed it to her and walked down the street as Marilyn Monroe instead of Norma Jean, because that's how she used to think of herself when she didn't want to be noticed. And there she was, Marilyn, all of a sudden.
What? Isn't that interesting how that works? So that's, I just, when I started going to networking, I'm the same way. I was really shy. I was, you know, a computer programmer, kind of, in a way. And a writer, and a lot of writers are introverts. And so you just have to make yourself get out there and make yourself talk to people. And it helps that I am interested in people. So I can sit there and listen to people talk for hours. And that's, then I don't have to say anything.
Oh, yeah.
I usually interrupt them. But...
I think that's one of the interesting things is that that's why I love doing the show. Because, and I like to talk to people from different aspects of creativity. because, I mean, not just show business, but writers and costumers and cinematographers and directors and poets, all different kinds of people, because everybody has their own creative bent. And it's so fascinating to see how they mold it. You know what I mean? And I love that.
Yeah. And how they just approach it and what how they think about it and their personalities. And to find out they have some of the same, I don't know, the same quirks you do, you know, like you're shy too. What? How could you be shy? You interview people. That's very cool.
Exactly. Yeah, I hear that a lot. It's just like, when I was in junior college, my major was literature, no shock. And I also theater because I love, I was acting at the same time. And so, like, okay, they kind of go together. But then when I went to the university, I took a minor in film and a major in anthropology. And they're like, what? My parents.
That is kind of crazy. And wait, and how do you be a shy actor?
How are you a shy actor? That's easy.
Yeah.
You're on stage or doing a TV show or something like that. You're doing, even if you're an extra, you're doing a character. You're not you. So you project that.
Oh, it's
that.
Easier.
You just hide behind the mask.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of when I was training, I was going around teaching, you know, computer stuff. That's kind of what it was. It was like, here's my mask. If I'm, you know, I'm competent and I'm a teacher. So, you know, yeah, it was kind of like that for me, too, in a lot of ways.
It was just
secret
like...
Secret okay. You'll never let me live down now.
When I go to science fiction conventions to promote my time travel book, I'm scared out of... Okay? Because I am shy. So when I get there and I'm on the stage and I'm talking. First of all, I love having a panel because there's other people, but I also am projecting. I'm playing the part.
Oh, I'm the famous author. That's awesome. I think probably a lot of us, you know, are shyer than we appear to be.
Yeah, I know. When I was going to my one and only time doing a panel on Comic-Con, I almost exploded a bottle of water because my brother came with me and we took the trolley because we live in San Diego down to downtown. And I had a bottle of water and I was squeezing it. And I mean, this is all the way to downtown.
Oh.
And it looked
in
like
your hand,
it was
about, you're just squeezing it because you're nervous?
I was just really scared. I was terrified.
Yeah.
And so my brother says, Sherry, if you keep doing that, that thing is going to explode all over us, and then you're going to be all wet, and you're going to be very embarrassed.
Oh, boy. Yep. Oh, yeah. It's interesting. I don't know why people are scared to get up in front of other people. And I thought I wasn't because I'd gotten good at getting in front of people for teaching, but then at a friend's memorial, I was a wreck. I was so scared. And part of it was, I mean, he was super funny, and all the people up there talking were super funny. So, you know, there's more pressure there. But, yeah, isn't it weird how the brain works? It's, you know, why would we be afraid of being in front of other people? They're just like us, you know? They're probably nervous too.
I think that's one of the reasons, not only do I love doing the show and talking to other people, it also is one of the reasons I read a lot of biographies and watch a lot of documentaries. It's because it helps me to understand that everybody's the same. Even though we're all different and we have different mentalities and from different cultures and whatever our belief system is, basically, every single person on this planet is exactly the same. We're all related, and we're all related to the planet, and it's all the same. No matter how you try to separate people, we're the same.
And there's
blood.
A lot of that going on lately too. A lot of, you know, people trying to separate and tribalism and stuff. And yeah, you're right. We're basically all the same.
We are. It's just our minds. because of created stories. It's interesting. It all comes from, the, like you said, the tribal mind and stories and how people are trying to create power and all this other stuff from stories. It all comes down to the stories we tell ourselves. But basically, we're all the same.
Yes.
Isn't that interesting? I mean, and it took me a while to figure
it
out.
Well, and that's why the, you know, social media is so powerful, because you can create a story and get it out through social media. It's affecting us now, really, really big.
Yeah, incredibly.
Very powerful.
Both in scary ways and in good ways. It's a very powerful tool, because the thing is, people are very vulnerable to believing. If someone seems not even sincere, but if they seem like they know what they're talking about from your point of view, you don't go any further. Not everybody. I'm just talking generally.
Yeah, right. No, I get most of my news from the headlines on Facebook. And if the headline makes it sound a certain way, then I assume that that's what the article says. You check a lot of those articles, what they say, even if you're friends who agree with you, have the same political positions you do, are posting the article, and they say, you know, they basically say this, that it agrees with the headline. You could go to that headline and look at it and go, that's not what it says. You can go to the article and look at it and go, that's not really what the article's saying. You know, people are twisting it in a way that fits their story. So it happens on both sides.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because I don't know, but when I was in college, when I took journalism classes, we had something that was called ethics. And
well, yeah. Well, my friend Karen McCarthy, she's a great voice actress and director, and she's done a whole lot in different parts of the industry. She did post-production stuff, and I mean, she knows the industry really well. And she that was her kind of I don't know if you call it an issue or her. She's really big on journalistic integrity. She's got a great series she wants to do that's kind of about that, and it's interesting to hear her talk about. This is how it used to be in journalism.
Exactly. I mean, in my 50s, I remember Walter Cronkite, and I do remember Walter Matthau, but different subject. I remember Walter Cronkite. I remember Hugh Downs. Really very honorable people. You never actually knew what political party the anchors of the different networks, and there were only three networks when I was growing up. You didn't know what political party they were with. You had no idea.
Really?
Comedians at that time would bash whatever president was there. You had no idea what political party, but they would bash them equally. Like Bob Hope, I didn't know he was Republican until the end of his life. I mean, he went against Eisenhower. It was good humored bashing, but he would make fun of every single president. You had no idea what political party he was with. It actually made sense to me, and now it's all split.
Yeah, it's all over the place, all over the map, and it's hard to know journalism and what's not journalism these days. And then something shows up on the web, hey, it might be true. And I know people who've fallen for the Onion articles. I love the Onion. It's so funny. But the people have fallen for those articles before thinking that they're real. You know? It's like,
did you read? That's my issue, is that people will share an article like, oh, this is the da-da-da-da. And I have friends on both sides of the thing. As long as I don't discuss that stuff, I can be friends with anybody. So I look at all the things that they put on their page, and I'm like, I just wonder, did you actually read this article that you just posted? And she goes, well, I read the, you know, what was on Facebook. I go, that's the first paragraph. Did you actually read the article?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. And I'm guilty of that sometimes, you know. You're in a hurry, you want to, it's an interesting thing. I post things so I remember to read them later, you know. Or videos especially. And yeah,
mark a
but,
lot.
But I do that, I don't comment, you know.
I have, you know, my Google page that I have, I will bookmark the ones I want to read, and then I read them. I read the whole thing from beginning to end and say, oh, okay, this one I like. Oh, this one's nonsense. You know, it's just, it's called discussion and using your mind.
Well, part of the problem is that we gravitate towards stories that reinforce our own stories, right? So if we believe a certain way, we're going to assume an article supports us in a lot of ways. And that, I think that plays into it a lot. And that's just how the mind works, I think. And it's nothing to be ashamed of. It's just something to be aware of so that we can critically think about what we're reading and what we're posting and what other people are posting. You know? And I kind of have a rule, and I haven't been following it lately, I have a rule to not post political or religious things because nobody can be nice on those kind of posts. It's really tough for people to be nice on those types of posts. There's so much emotion, it gets in the way of logic, and it doesn't really help most people change their minds on an issue.
Exactly.
There's one person, and give a shout out to my friend Audrey. She'll post political stuff, and a lot of times, you know, if I'm on the fence about an argument or I haven't researched the argument, her stuff will make me think, and I'll be able to kind of look past my biases and go, you know, she's right, because she's able to do that really well. If you don't have a gift for that, there's not much point in putting political stuff other than, you know, supporting that thing. And for me, it's not worth the arguments. For most things, but then lately there have been some things that it's just like, you know, I have to comment. And there's some things that shouldn't be political, you know, taking kids away from their mom. I'm a mom now. I can't imagine even before I was a mom that I could support something like that. I mean, that's not a political thing. That's a humanitarian thing. And people are politicizing all these issues. So I've had to break my political silence a couple of times for stuff like that. But it's, you know, being in this industry, you don't want to tick people off. You don't want to create a bunch of controversy on your web page.
Oh, no.
It's not going to help anybody for the most part. So.
We're just talking in general. We're not really, I don't believe in bashing anybody. I'm just saying that, I just am saying that I wish it was like where they just told a story. And they didn't put a slant to it. It was just, this is the way it is. You were quoting Walter Cronkite. But this is the way it is. This is the story. And you make your own minds up what you think, which way you want to go and stuff like that. That's my point. That's my whole point. I'm not going to promote
opinions are important, but make it clear that it's an opinion article and not a... You know, not a factual piece, you know. So, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, that's all. It's just my entire point is that I rather it be fair and honest and just say, like I said, use old standard of journalistic ethics. I mean, I was 10, I went to college. And I took my class about 10 years after Watergate. So, yeah, there's still that.
Oh, wow.
That was still part of journalistic values was what happened with Watergate, you know, and that was very much part of our class. We talked about
it. How did that impact journalism? Did that start the spin, or was that just still part of everyday ethics? Everyone still stuck to their ethics back then on that issue?
It was part of our ethics talk when we were talking about it. And it was also a part of being honest and sticking to the story no matter what, and not being swayed one way or another. It just the narrow focus of the storyline. And following what's effective. When you're a good journalist, you're following the clues of the story, and you're just following the line, and you're going after the truth. The truth is what it was about. It wasn't about I want to make this person more powerful. It wasn't about I want to put my own view out there. It was definitely not about I want to be famous. That's not what journalism was about. Journalism was about following the line of the story and doing the story.
The truth is out there. It's like the X-Files, right? The truth is out there. We need to find the truth. And,
but that was
yeah,
the challenge.
Let's know.
That's
yep.
It's sadly. Do you have anything that's coming up that you want people to see, or any shows or any kind of stuff that that would interest the
It's hard. I haven't done animation exclusively. I've done animation and live action, but nothing huge in live action. But the hard part about animation is it takes a long time. It takes the time to animate it and everything else. So it's you're sitting on it for a long time before you can talk about it. Something I can talk about now is that I really want everyone to take a look at. There's a show, there's already one season out on Amazon Prime. It's called Nico and the Sword of Light. It is a great show. The animation is wonderful. I got to work on the second season, and they announced it at Comic-Con that they're having a second season, so I can actually talk about that now. But
cool.
Also, I haven't posted this on Facebook because I haven't checked to make sure that it's okay to post pictures and stuff of it. I did a second season wrap party fairly recently, and I got to see some of the footage for the second season. I wanted to cry. It was so good. I can't tell you how beautiful the animation is. And, I mean, like I said, the first season is great and beautiful. They somehow topped it. They took it to the next level. There are effects that I can't tell you. And Amazon really knows how to put on a good story. They know how to pick the right people and put the right stuff into it. Like, they won't skimp. On the story, and they will do whatever it takes to make it good. They'll put the work into it. They'll put it for Amazon, and you guys, if you don't have Amazon Prime, this is the series to get Amazon Prime for. Either just try it out and cancel if you have to, but this is the series just to check it out. And it's just animation, but it's something that adults will be interested in, kids will be interested in. But wait until second season comes out. Keep an eye out, or check it out now. And then keep it and see second season two. But I mean, you'll enjoy and you'll love first season, especially if you like things like Avatar: The Last Airbender, the Dragon Prince, that sort of thing. It's fantasy, it's action, it's got some comedy in it, and just the writing is beautiful. In the writers' room, we were pitching ideas and stuff, and some of the writers from the last season were there, and you could hear them doing that. They'd do the voices of some of the characters as they're pitching ideas, and it's so great to hear that. And the characters are so interesting that you glom onto them, and you just want to play with them, and you want to work with them. And it's I can't tell you how great this is. And the writers for all the seasons are going to be great. First season, you can just watch them and see how great the writers are. But we've got, like, award-winning writers like Len Neely, Mei Chan was on there, Jeff Thor. His episodes just the dialogue and you're thrown out of the water. It was story-edited by my friend Matt Wayne, and he's an excellent writer, too. He's one of those who can do the voices, and he writes amazingly. I can't even tell you all the people that are on it for first season. Oh, Patrick Rieger, he was second season. He was just man, he can do comedy like nobody's business. And his writing is great. And he story edited some of the second season. Of course, there's Rob Hoagie, who was in charge of the whole thing. He's amazing to work with and great in a room to encourage writers to just be themselves and do their thing and just get the best out of the writers. So I can't tell you how great it's going to be.
I'm sorry, we're out of time. I'm sorry. I mean,
we're out of time.
So I wanted, I didn't mean to interrupt, but it's going to cut off. So I wanted to thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me on. I'm sorry for talking so much.
We had so much fun talking, we lost track of time. At least I did. So I wanted to thank you so much for taking the time to come on.
Yeah, thanks for having me again. Appreciate it.
And thank you. And thank you for chatting with Sharon.
Sure. Thanks for having me on. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks.